GHRT Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Mike and Nate and Harrison teaming up to help you sell your home faster and for top dollar. This is the George Hale Rick Tyler Show on guard. And our good friend Major Carl Lamb of the Maine Army National Guard takes a seat behind the BPG and SS7A. And you bring a number of guests into our studio this morning. Who are these people here with you, Carl?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having us back. So joining me today are Master Sergeant Andy Sinclair and Technical Sergeant Dylan Clare. And despite the wonderful ring that the law offices of Sinclair and Clare has, they're actually not attorneys. Master Sergeant Sinclair joins us from the public affairs realm. Prior to that, he was in security forces. And Tech Sergeant Clare has been a recruiter for about 6 years. And prior to that, he spent 9 years in the avionics community. And these gentlemen agreed to come on with me today and talk a little bit about what goes on behind the gate at the 101st Air Refueling Wing. We've all seen the photos of the KC-135 with the boom off the back refueling that C-5 or something like that. But there's a lot that goes into that. And so they agreed to come on and talk today about the part of the community that they are. So,
good morning, guys.
How many people are behind the pilot, the co-pilot, and the crew on board a KC-135? But there's a lot of people behind the scenes. It's the same thing, the football team. You got the coach and the players, but a lot of ancillary people. So, Andy, we'll go to you first. There are a lot of important jobs. You said you had security.
Roger that. Yeah. So everybody has a bigger organization. Everybody plays a part. Everybody out there at the wing. We just wrapped up another outstanding year. Our airmen, our maniacs, did an outstanding job in 2019 between deployments and exercises and inspections. They all did an outstanding job. And the key thing is that we kind of moved away from the guard from being a strategic reserve, and we're more of an operational force now. So what that means is that we have kind of two hats that we wear. We have the first hat, which is kind of like our home front hat, which we support our state and our community and also the nation. But at the end of the day, our commander in chief is the governor, and that's who we kind of report to. But now the other hat, the other dual status, I guess is the best way to put it, is the other hat is a federal hat. So we put that hat on at the flip of a switch, and we become active duty, and we can go anywhere at any moment's notice, which is pretty cool in my opinion. One of the things that our wing commander, Colonel Roy, which I think has been on this show before, one of the things that he likes to say is that if we have to leave tonight, we will, and we'll be ready. And I think to me, that's pretty exciting.
Well, Dylan, if I was to ask you about GPS, you could probably tell me that.
So the Air National Guard splits it up into two. So we have communication, navigation, and then we have instrumentation and guidance systems. So I was on the guidance system side. So the communication, navigation side is your antennas, your radios, right, all your comms. And that's why I did the instrument side. So it's flight director systems, autopilot, basically anything in that cockpit that's going to really help that pilot, right, navigate, use the plane. So obviously we need, still live bodies physically flying the plane, and they're highly trained. But when they're flying for 8, 10, 12-hour missions constantly, they obviously use all those things. Just kind of like we use cruise control on the interstate, to kind of alleviate some of that stress. They're doing the same thing with our systems.
Pardon the term, but you guys must have some of the sexiest jobs in the National Guard. And I can imagine that if someone wants to think about joining the National Guard, you two would be like poster people for them. Don't shout me down. Don't jump in all at once.
Yeah, no, I mean, I joined at 17, so I've been pretty fortunate in life that, I was raised over in Western Maine. I went to school in Mount Blue over in Farmington and joined right in high school, and then kind of, went away for about a year of training. Avionics is a pretty technical field. Came back and then went right into Husson. The guard helped me pay to go through Husson, got a bachelor's degree there in criminal justice, and then was fortunate enough to kind of work through college full-time, work nights at the base. So I got a lot of hands-on experience working full-time in avionics. Worked some on the flight line too as a crew chief, and then able to transition over to full-time force as a recruiter. And so just kind of really just, that's my story. I mean, just kind of joining really young, kind of getting all the steps. But yeah, I think that, when you're probably 18, 19 years old and you got, four engines running on that plane and you got an air crew on board and something maybe misfired, right? Maybe a software update had a glitch. Maybe they turned the system on wrong. Sometimes that happens, and then they ask for, hey, we need avionics troop. And so you're sending out a pretty young airman to climb that ladder, and everything's running, everything's hopped up, and you're kind of there to save the day. And that's a pretty rare thing today to expect that of a younger person.
Mm-hmm. Same story for you, sir?
Yes, sir. So right out of high school, I'm right here in Bangor. Right out of high school, I came in. My father was out at the guard base for 25 years. My brother now serves out there as well in the communication realm. So that's pretty cool. Pretty proud of that. So right out of high school, I joined into security forces, like Major Lam had said, and I kind of learned the law enforcement background. Military police is kind of what that is. Got a few deployments under my belt, met a lot of really cool people. And that's really what the biggest part is for me, is that the biggest takeaway in my 14 years being out there is the friendships and the camaraderie, but also the trades that you learn, because you can't learn. I mean, you can learn that stuff other places, but where else am I going to be able to check IDs or search vehicles overseas or anything like that? Being in that career field, so it's been definitely an eye opener. And then transitioning into this career field now into public affairs, being a videographer, which is what I do, and kind of traveling the world and shooting photography and shooting video and expanding that network and gaining friendships has been invaluable to me. So it's pretty cool.
And if you like the sultry bass tones that Mass Sergeant Sinclair is churning out over there, they actually run a podcast, The Wing does. It's called The Maniac Radio Show. And really? Mass Sergeant, would you enlighten folks on just if they'd like to hear some more of the stuff that you guys churn out, how they might be able to tune into that?
Yes, sir. So the Wing as well.
Do it in your radio voice.
I actually don't have a radio voice. I've been working on it for the last 7 years, but yeah. So we do have a podcast. Like Major Lam said, we do every month. It's a different type of theme. So we may have a different guest speaker, kind of like we're guest speakers for you right now. We may have a chaplain. We may have a recruiter. We may have somebody from maintenance or a pilot or what have you. But it's really kind of nice because it expands my knowledge on what goes on out there at the Wing, because there are a lot of jobs out there, and unless you're a recruiter, you usually don't know. It's hard to figure out what goes on out there all the time. So coming up with new creative ways to get that story, the maniac story is what we call it, out to the public, that's pretty exciting to me. So,
and folks can tap into it on iTunes, is that right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, so you can go through iTunes. It's now on iHeartRadio, and we also have an app that we use. You can stream right from that as well.
If you're on iHeartRadio, you got everything going, really.
That's good to know.
Oh, you get some requests, yeah. This is probably for Dylan. I'm always fascinated when either one or two, maybe more, 135s leave and they head out, and I don't know where they're going, but I sit there and watch them fly out over my house, and they're going to meet up with some airplanes somewhere out there, somewhere, and they all end up in the same spot at the right time. That, to me, that's always been a fascinating thing. That kind of goes through your avionics end of it, right?
Yes and no, sir. So a lot of that's the operational side, right? So we have pilots that their full-time job is that very specific logistical work. So they're the ones behind the scenes, right? So they're not jumping in right seat, left seat, but they're the ones coordinating with the receiving aircraft. And then, of course, with us, what time, where are they taking off? What time do we need to go airborne? Where are we going to hook up? It's usually over the Atlantic. And then, we have, whatever pattern work, essentially, right? You're just flying in a big loop while you're refueling. So like a nice, slow, easy loop all the way through. And then, once you're topped off with gas, away they go and wherever their destination is. And then we kind of return to ship and do it all over again.
Do they ever signal you and say thanks? Do you see them wave through the cockpit window there? Do they ever offer a tip, a gratuity? Well, here's a fiver.
We pretend they do.
Yeah. The enlisted troops think. Yeah. So when we launch the plane physically on the ground, we salute the air crew. And then it's actually really neat in our airframe, the boomer, the one that operates the boom that refuels the plane, mm-hmm. they are very close, right? So that you can tell if the receiving aircraft shaved that morning. I mean, they're that close. So yeah, you could absolutely, have a wave or a salute or when they're done. I mean, they also have, visual and audio as well when they're refueling, but they obviously can do that, and it's pretty neat.
Can I follow up with a question? And that is, if you go to see a phlebotomist and someone comes into the room, they get three tries, and if they can't find the vein, they send them away and they bring in another phlebotomist, okay? If the boom operator is having a bad day, if they didn't practice with that little claw machine enough at the arcade as a kid, do they try three times and then, move over, Smedley, I'm going to take a stab at this?
Well, I think the upside is that they spend a lot of time in training. So, I mean, our boomers are constantly training. So we have certified boom instructors, and then obviously they're taking over. So when they get out of about a 6-month school to transition into that field, they never really stop training. I mean, you can always hone that skill. And that's one of those skills, like, you know, it's not like the claw machine where if you drop it, you go home and you're a little sad for the day. I mean, that's kind of a critical need, right? I mean, we will run out of fuel eventually. Someone needs that gas.
Somebody better put it in that plane.
Right. So the boomer is usually the stable one. It's usually the receiving aircraft that gets a little antsy because you don't know what their experience is.
It brings a whole new meaning to the phrase, okay, boomer.
Oh, right, exactly. Well, I don't know if we've ever had a boom operator here or not, Rick. I only knew one. In fact, you have women who are boom operators.
Absolutely.
I remember, well, like in the gym, Mel. I don't know if you knew Mel. Did you know Mel?
Yep. Firefighter Mel?
Huh?
Bangor firefighter Mel?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, do not arm wrestle Mel.
I'll write that.
Under any condition.
Put that on your podcast.
Do not make that mistake. You will. Yeah. She will break your arm.
Well, I thought there were hydraulics to help move the boom, but maybe they got to, you know, maybe they got to muscle that thing.
It's all manual.
But we've always been proud of the operation here. It's been really something that I think the community has always been proud of. You know, every once in a while somebody will say, it makes noise. And I always say, yeah, that's good noise. I like the noise.
That's the sound of freedom. How proud of the 101st. Want to mention the 286, the Combat Sustainment Support Battalion.
That's right. So they went out the door to Poland last April, and they're about to begin that process of transitioning home. So within the first week of February, they should be back in the contiguous United States doing their out processing. And then sometime in the first half of February, they should be back here in Maine. So we're really looking forward to having them home. Proud of all the work that they've done out there in support of Operation Atlantic Resolve.
See, that's the hardest part of the job, having to leave the fam for a time. I guess the good part of the job is coming home, and I guess you guys with the 101st, you get to leave on a daily basis and come back home on a daily basis.
It varies. So we have, like, so your air crew, absolutely, right? So they're going to fly at, you know, various hours. They're going to land usually, you know, back at the same place they start, or at least we hope, you know, most of the time. And then from there, it really depends on the career field you choose. So we have, you know, the bulk of the base is probably doing somewhere in that, you know, 4-6 month range sometimes. You know, the aircraft world tends to do a little less of a deployment, but more frequent. So I think that almost, you know, as a recruiter, my applicants know very well in advance that you will be deployable. I can't guarantee when that's going to happen, but plan on it happening. If it doesn't happen in your first contract, then maybe that's a good thing, maybe that's not. But it will happen. It may be for 30 days, it may be for 6-7 months. Those are things, obviously, the recruiter doesn't have a lot of say over. I can give them my, you know, my best guess of that field deploys this way in, you know, historically. But we all are, I mean, of course, everyone in this room has deployed in the past.
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure to meet you again.
Hey, thanks for having us back, and thanks for the potential idea for another show. Maybe a boom operator here at some point in the future. We'll look into that.
I'd love to talk to a boom operator.
It's also nice to have two guys in the studio who have more frequent flyer miles than George jet away at the sight of a snowflake hail.
Yeah, Mr. Okay. Europe. Mr. Europe. What's your next ticket, Rick?
Italy this summer.
Right, I'm only going to Florida.
Major Lamb, thank you so much. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thanks.
This is GHRT. GHRT Rewinds, brought to you by your hometown real estate team, Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Thinking about selling your home? Call 629-9211 and start packing.